From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Capitol Hill when a scientist was testifying before Congress about global warming. This wasn't last month or last year or even last decade. This was 1988, and the scientist was a physicist named Will Keepin. Start now, he was telling Congress, about finding clean ways to power our world. He promised Congress that if we replaced dirty power plants with cleaner forms of energy, we could see huge gains within just 50 years. And Keepin also promised that the rooms would be just as warm, the lights just as bright, and the beers just as cold. It was a remarkable moment because scientists are still working to convince Congress of the same thing 3 decades later. And there's something else that hasn't changed much either. Or maybe it's changing. Maybe it is. Will Keepin recognized at the time, 1988, that in his field and in the environmental movement, there was frequent sexual harassment, and he wanted to change that. He found that it was difficult for anyone to talk about it directly. He had been inspired by the Truth and Reconciliation process in South Africa, among other places, and he helped create some early workshops to confront a question. Are there parallels between the exploitation of the earth and the exploitation of the feminine? Today, Will Keepin works hand-in-hand with a number of partners and experts on the subject of gender reconciliation. Chief among them is Reverend Cynthia Bricks, who has worked with Keepin on a 2015 book called Divine Duality, The Power of Reconciliation Between Women and Men. Their book opens with a provocative quote from D.H. Lawrence. The future of humanity will depend on relations not between nations, but relations between men and women. The Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies at Nazareth College is working with the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence to bring both Bricks and Keepin to Rochester next month. They're going to lead an event titled Transforming Patriarchy in Religions from Gender Oppression to Beloved Community. And they're leading a retreat with workshops and the retreat titled Liberation from Gender Oppression. So these are events that you can get involved with. You can check out if you like, and we'll tell you how in just a moment. Let me welcome in studio Kit Miller, director of the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence, who's back with us now. Kit, welcome. Always nice to have you.
Thank you, Evan.
And on the line with us are both Reverend Cynthia Bricks. Reverend Bricks, nice to have you. Thanks for taking the time.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
And Dr. Will Keepin. Oh, hi, Dr. Keepin. How are you? Nice to have both of you. They are. Let me get the full titles to give you your proper due. They're the co-directors of the Santayana Institute and the co-founders of the Gender Equity and Reconciliation International Project, often referred to as GERI. So welcome to both of you. Thank you both for taking the time. And let me just start by asking both of you, and I guess, Will, I'll start with you because I watched that video clip of you talking to Congress 30 years ago. First of all, boy, you were a pretty forward-thinking guy in a number of ways back then. I wonder if you look back at those clips of you talking to Congress and you think on climate change, and then you think about what was going through your mind about sexual harassment and gender disparities, and are you disappointed 30 years later, or do you feel like we are moving the needle on those subjects?
Well, thank you, Evan, for that question. We are moving the needle on this subject, but very slowly. Largely because of commitments by, the fossil fuel industries and utilities and nuclear power industries to kind of slow things down. But we are moving the needle forward. There's a number of very exciting developments. Some of the states have made very significant progress forward. So, and most households now have the light bulbs that I was introducing to Congress at that time, because I remember I was showing a light bulb that I said one of these light bulbs, just screwing one of these in, could save 400 pounds of coal from being burned at the power plant over its lifetime. And now we have these compact fluorescent and LED light bulbs that at that time were available, but very much not yet penetrating the market. And now they're found in most every household. So we're definitely moving forward.
And now on the subject of gender reconciliation, on the subject of, well, let's just take, Me Too. You co-authored a piece on that, and you've had a lot to say about Me Too and what's most of the last year now since the Harvey Weinstein story broke just about a year ago in the New York Times and the New Yorker. And Reverend Bricks, I guess I want to ask you directly if you think that this is a change moment more than any other that you have seen. In other words, you and Will and so many that you work with have been working on these kinds of issues. But do you think that particular story is going to loom above others? And is this a moment where we don't look back, where this is going to be lasting change in this area?
I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. It is a moment, and we are seeing the shift. And I don't think it's going to go away. It's kind of like the underbelly. These things have been happening for thousands of years. And it's just that everything's coming forward, truth be known. And the beauty is that the women are speaking out. It's really important that these stories come forward. And we honor all these stories and the truth that's being told. And of course, as we're going to dive into now, is what our work is about, is creating safe space so everyone's story can be heard, because men too have been suffering and in pain around the patriarchal system.
Yeah, I already have a couple of emails from listeners who are very curious about the work that you do and what you mean by gender reconciliation. We'll get to those in just a moment. Let me ask Kit Miller about what's coming up here. So let's just take it from the Gandhi Institute's perspective. We do hope to have Dr. Shafiq join us to talk about what's going to be going on at the Hickey Center. But Liberation from Gender Oppression is a retreat that's happening October 11th through the 14th. And why don't you tell us who it's aimed at and what you hope to sort of accomplish through those days, Kit?
Thank you, Evan. And I'm just so delighted that Cynthia and Will are going to be able to be joining us. I actually picked up their book last year and read it because I was searching for my own answers around what to do with the pain that was being unleashed in the media, at the U of R campus, like just out in the world. It seemed to be ever present, and I thought, who's really doing work on a deep level to address this? You know, beyond just the social media blame pushing around and moving around, people being attacked, people being marginalized in a whole, you know, another form of marginalization. So I read their book, and it was deeply meaningful to me. So right after that, this wonderful things that happen sometimes in life, I found out, what do you know? Dr. Shafiq had invited these two to Rochester, New York. And what do you know? They were willing and able to spend the weekend after the talk at Nazareth to spend some time with us, really giving us an opportunity here in Rochester to experience the work that they do. And my hope is that many people of all ages and gender backgrounds will choose to participate and learn together how we could really delve deeply and come out transformed, or at least healed and understanding some of the pain in a different way. One of my favorite quotes is James Baldwin, who says, you know, people are trapped in history and history are trapped in them. I just paraphrased a little bit. But we can't, like, ignore the pain and everything that's happened. And so let's turn and face it. Let's be courageous.
People want to register. How do they do that, Kit?
They can jump on the Gandhi Institute website. It's GandhiInstitute.org. And I'm also very grateful to the local Pachamama Alliance and the Mankind Project, who are also sponsoring this event in Rochester. So we're hoping to have a really cool, diverse group of human beings together.
And Kit, you know, when you think about it, and I know that Will and Cynthia will address this, some of the work that they do is, well, it's a sensitive subject. It can be very defensive for some. Just getting people to come to a retreat for several days, there's this idea that, well, are you only attracting people who already agree with the message? How do you bring in people who need this kind of message, or at least as you think, and they might think, that the people who need this message most are the least likely to probably sign up? How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to hear what our guests from across the continent have to say about this point. But for one thing, there's a way I don't mind preaching to the choir. The choir needs to be preached to sometimes, and they need tools and skills. So if we're mainly preaching to the choir leaves strengthened and having their own work done. That in and of itself is not a bad thing. I'm really going to be, and we are reaching out, especially to college students. Mm-hmm. I want to influence the trajectory of leaders in the future to be able to relate to these dynamics in a very different way. And one thing I want to say, you know, like for me, you and I were talking a little bit before the show. For me, this work isn't about trying to make men and women the same. For me, this work is about deeply acknowledging the harm that's been done by the systems that were created long before any of us were born, and how we might relate to them now in a much healthier way. And I'm especially delighted, I don't know actually if Cynthia and Will have been up to this part of the world before, but I always want to acknowledge that we are in Haudenosaunee territory here, Seneca Nation land. And their legacy of gender equity is a remarkable one that lasted for hundreds of years and is still present in the systems and governance of that nation. So we have a legacy to draw from in this part of the world by virtue of breathing the air and drinking the water. We take in the cellular memory, and I believe in some way, of the people that were here before who had a most remarkable society based on gender equity, which did not mean men and women were the same or did the same things, but that there was equity.
Yeah, I have learned so much from our friends at Ganondagan, Michael Galbin, Peter Jemison, and their friends. And I'm like a lot of people growing up without a whole lot of education about that. When I learn about how they approach equity, I do find it instructive and really sort of prescient when you go back hundreds of years and you think about these issues we're grappling with today. So
yeah.
So let's turn it to the co-founders and the co-authors of the book called Divine Duality, The Power of Reconciliation Between Men and Women. And maybe what I'll do for both Will and Cynthia is I'll start with an email from a listener who says, because I think your response will probably be instructive to us. This is from Donald, who says, "Hi, Evan. I'm wondering if your guests will at least acknowledge some basic differences between men and women. For example, boys are more aggressive. Men are more violent. That's not to condone those things, but it's to start with the understanding that biologically men and women are very different. Or do they think the differences in rates of violence and aggression are simply the product of social forces?" That's from Don. Cynthia, Will, I'll hand it to you for that.
Well, Don's question is an excellent one, and I think there's certainly validity to support each of the different gender theories. So we have social constructivist theories, we have essentialist theories. There's valid data in support of all of them. So we don't deny any of those data. What we would say is that regardless of that, there is a level of truth-telling that needs to come forward that has been systematically prevented in the culture of gender oppression that we've all been conditioned by. And precisely because of that, we aren't able to move this whole thing forward. So we are not denying the differences. And in fact, I would agree that we're not trying to make men and women the same. We are trying to hold the view that men and women and also the masculine and feminine perspectives have equal value. But we're not trying to make everything equal in a wash. We celebrate the differences. But what we're really trying to do is to bridge this tremendous conflict that's been there and that has been so highlighted recently by the Me Too campaign. So through the Me Too, we're hearing particularly the voices of women and the way they've suffered. But we also need to hear the way that men have suffered. And this is a very important point because one of the key things in all of our workshops across 9 countries over 26 years, one of the themes we constantly hear is that the women are amazed when they hear the truth of men's experience and the degree of suffering that men have gone through. And of course, the opposite is true also. Men are amazed when they hear the degree of suffering in detail that women live with on a daily basis. And so what we would summarize, one of our major learnings is that men cannot hear the deep truth of women and remain the same men. And women cannot hear the deep, deep truth of men and remain the same women.
I want to just add with that we are welcoming and honoring of all the gender identities and expressions. And at the same time, in our particular work, we dive deeply in and work with the binary. So when we keep referring to men and women, the majority of us are born identified as either male or female. And we come into, what Kit said, a system that is often oppressive to all of us. And so I just want to acknowledge that there are gender identities and expressions outside of the binary of male and female.
Yeah, I take that point. And, you know, it's interesting. This is another question that we've had, which is that, is this just about male hating, man hating? And both of you in your presentations have repeatedly stressed the point that it is not. And that I think, if I'm reading into your work correctly, it's to say that it's an acknowledgement that patriarchy is real, but it hurts men and women. It doesn't just hurt women, and this is not just about bashing men. So, you know, some of our listeners might be skeptical that you're threading a needle there. Let's talk about that. Why do you feel it's important to stress that this is not just about bashing men?
Well, we're both sitting here thinking who's going first. I just want to say that the gist or the focus of our work is coming back into remembrance of our kind of relationship with ourselves and with each other. And in doing so, I tend to believe that there is a place of nonviolence, of not hate and no hatred, of kind of that pure innocence that we all have. And so I just want to name that because it's an important aspect. We can get into the socio-political arguments and conflicts, but when we come together and just listen deeply to each other and we share the truth of our experience of whatever gender we are, of what it's like in our pain and suffering in the world, and really be able to hear the other and do it with the intention of holding safe space and a healing intention, then we can come into knowing each other better and becoming friends again.
Go ahead, Will.
And just to build on that, basically it's not just women who will benefit by this work of gender equity and reconciliation. Basically, men have been conditioned in certain ways, and part of this work helps men to face that conditioning and to decondition themselves. This work is not about women versus men. It's about justice versus injustice. And we have a systemic crisis of gender injustice. And that's what we bring women and men together to look at. So the foundational premise of our work is that both women and men are afflicted by gender injustice, and each needs the other for a true and complete healing and transformation. And men benefit tremendously. It improves the quality of their lives and their relationships, both with each other and with women.
There's a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. that really exemplifies our work. He said, injustice and corruption will never be transformed by keeping them hidden, but only by bringing them out into the light and confronting them with the power of love. And so when we say there's no male bashing, that's true. It doesn't mean that we don't get into our feelings. That can be anger and sadness and grief and longing and all of this. We bring that up. We invite that in, but we don't do it with an attack on each other. We do it with an awareness that it's there for healing and that we're going to ride this wave. We're going to confront it. We're going to acknowledge it. And we're going to come out the other side. And when we do that, what we see over and over and over again is that women and men come to a place of not only mutual respect and equal rights, if you will, but a mutual reverence, a higher reverence for one another in relationship.
I'm talking to Reverend Cynthia Bricks and Dr. William Keepin, and Will and Cynthia are the co-directors of the Satyana Institute and the co-founders of the Gender Equity and Reconciliation International Project. And they are bringing their work and their message in the form of workshops and a retreat to Rochester here, an event called Liberation from Gender Oppression. And you can jump on the Gandhi Institute's website to register to learn more there. They're also, and by the way, that's about a month from now, October 11th through the 14th here in Rochester. The night before, October 10th, they're going to be at the Otto Schultz Community Center at Nazareth College as a guest of the Hickey Center for an event called Transforming Patriarchy in Religions from Gender Oppression to Beloved Community. And I have an email on that subject, which I'll get to in our second half hour. Listeners, if you want to call the program to comment, offer questions or ideas, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let me ask Will and Cynthia about some of the messages I saw popularly cheered here in Rochester just a week ago when one of the hottest selling authors in the world, Jordan Peterson, came to Rochester on his international book tour. He is a Canadian psychologist who first really became sort of super nuclear hot in media around the world when he pushed back against laws in Canada mandating respect for transgender pronouns and identity. And he said, I don't have to do that, and the law can't make me do that. And he became a big star. And here in Rochester, his presentation, which drew about 1,500 people, got the biggest cheers when he pushed back on this idea that he says what feminism and what these kinds of movements are doing are trying to force equal outcomes when what we should be learning from everything from the animal kingdom to human interaction is that There is hierarchy, which is based on competence, generally based on competence. And we shouldn't fear that, and we shouldn't tell boys that they're going to be toxically masculine if they do anything from play football to flirt with a girl on the bus. And he says that we're teaching boys the wrong message, and that while we should acknowledge that rape and sexual assault is real and dangerous, we also overdo it with some of the Me Too stuff. He's essentially calling for a backlash to Me Too. And he's very, very popular. Now, most of his audience were white men, but not all. And I wonder if Will and Cynthia have some thoughts about why that message is gaining such sort of power and resonance around the world. And, you know, what you might add to that conversation with the men who are showing up largely to these events saying, yeah, I'm tired of being attacked. I'm tired of being told that I'm toxic. I'm tired of being told that I'm, you know, just a danger based on who I am. What would you say to that, Will and Cynthia?
I think that's a very real issue that he's pointing to. It's a complex situation because the women's truth needs to come out, and these stories, which have been buried for so long, absolutely need to come out, because keeping these stories untold is one of the key tools of patriarchal oppression. And they have been kept untold in every institution. It's been taboo in every institution of society, the family, the church, the government, you know, the media, the corporations, you name it, the educational institutions. These stories have been kept under wraps, and we can see from the payoffs of the Catholic Church to Harvey Weinstein the amount of money and extent to which the major institutions will go to keep them hidden. So it's absolutely essential that these stories come forward. However, what happens is the first they come forward is there's a natural outrage, and much of it is directed against men. And so, and rightly so, against those men who committed these violations. One thing we need to realize, for example, on the crisis of rape on university campuses, 90% of the rapes are committed by 3% of the men. And these are repeat offenders who are then given a slap on the hand and then turned back into the field. Same thing with the Catholic Church. You know, 94% of the Catholic priests were never abusive. All this abuse was caused by 6% of the Catholic priests, who were then also given a slap on the hand. It was hidden, hushed up, and they could just keep going. So what Me Too is going to do is to say no to that minority of men who are ruining things for all women and all men, really. So that's the first step. But the men are not wrong to feel injured. And here's the key where this work comes in, because what we do in this work is we give a space for the men's voices to come forward. And that space is not yet opened up in response to the Me Too movement. And that's why we're seeing this very strong reaction. But the bottom line is that men have a very profound and powerful story to tell. And what men learn in our work, and this is a very key point, is that the greatest male privilege is not any of the social advantages afforded to men in patriarchal society. The greatest male privilege is to consciously participate in deconstructing the unjust patriarchal system itself. And we have many men who have come to our work over the years who are totally committed to that and are working very profoundly side by side with women. And that's why we know it's possible for men and women to join together and collectively take down this oppressive system.
Okay. Cynthia?
Oh, how can I follow that? That was really, I mean, that was beautiful. And I think the only thing that comes to me and just a reminder is being in relationship. So I don't find this as a competition, what's happening out in the world. We need to come back into remembrance of our relationship with each other and with the earth. And what this work was founded 26 years ago, as you know, in the environmental community that Will was working in. And the premise of the work started with the question of, are there parallels between the exploitation of the earth and the exploitation of the feminine? And so when any person on earth, any being on earth, any being on earth in this creation is harmed, we're out of relationship with it. And so we need to come back into that relationship, and that's what our work is about. Right relationship, aligning with each other in justice and in accountability and in compassion, in loving kindness. One question I want to go back to, Evan, that you brought up is, how to attract the people that may be not in the choir. And we're really enthused because our training, our year-long training right now that's going on, we have a very diverse population from evangelical, progressive evangelical Christians in, you know, from the Boston area to liberals who live in California and, you know, are kind of healers and massage therapists and whatever. And I'm not giving a full range, but I'm just saying there's a wonderful diversity. The other thing that I want to point out in our work, as much as possible, we work toward the intersectionality. So we cannot speak about gender without race, class, ethnic background, all of these things, age coming into focus. And while we focus on gender, those other pieces come up. So, for example, Black men, African-American men in the United States are feeling a great difference of being a man in this country than a white man. And that, in our work, is allowed to come forward and spoken to. Hmm. One last thing is, for the Rochester, New York workshop, we will have an international team. So we have some of our team members from South Africa coming in. So we don't work in a vacuum. It's not, as I think all of us know, it's not just happening here in the States. This is a global issue around gender injustice and how we need to come into healing and reconciliation.
Well, before I get to Stephanie's phone call, and I'll read some more of your emails in a moment, so Stephanie, hang there for 1 second. Just to kind of put a fine point on this, because I think my mind is still on some of the conversations I had last Wednesday night outside the Kodak Center with the people who came from many different states to hear a very different kind of presentation that Rochester is going to have from both Cynthia Bricks and Will Keepin. The concern I'm hearing among sort of the acolytes of Peterson and others is that that we are going to be subverting individuals for the sake of understanding groups. And I think that's a bit of a straw man. I understand the concern. I think it's a bit of a straw man because, you know, I'm thinking of a white man who is growing up in a beleaguered, formerly industrial town, poor job prospects, a lot of poverty, a lot of drugs, saying, where's my privilege? And I understand that. I understand that frustration that some people would have is, well, you're grouping me into this super advantage group, but look at my life. You didn't ask me what my life is about. And I think that's a fair sort of either argument or point to try to make here. But I think we could probably, I wonder if Will and Cynthia think we have to be able to do both, which is to say, we want to know everyone's individual experience and we want to let individuals speak and we want to understand who they are as individuals, while also saying as a group, men have had it easier. I think that's, I'm willing to say it. I'm a white man. I think it's easier. I think there's a lot more things handed. I think there's power and dominance that is structured in the direction of men. Again, not always, not every day, not every situation. Can we do both, Will and Cynthia? Is important to be able to speak about what advantage and what the difference is and what patriarchy is, while also saying to someone, I'm going to honor your individual experience and I'm going to sort of evaluate what you say as an individual as opposed to the group.
Well, it's certainly true, as you say, that men, there are certain advantages that have been afforded to men. They have been given a certain set of privileges, and this is part of the whole structure of the system of oppression. It has also given the women a natural focus. They target the men as the problem, as the source of their affliction, as the enemy in a way. I think that's part of the, quote, genius of the patriarchy, is to get men and women blaming each other. And then those who design the system at the top and are pressing the entire population are off scot-free because no one's pointing the finger at them. And in fact, this system was somehow set up to benefit a very tiny minority at the top who are oppressing the entire population. But let me just speak to this issue around like men who are less privileged and saying, well, you know, I haven't had these advantages. And so, you know, this doesn't apply to me. Or maybe one could say, well, they don't have any other choices because they're living in a suppressed community. And so it's natural that they develop some of these patriarchal attitudes as a way of reclaiming their masculine power. But in fact, we've found that men at every socioeconomic class respond positively to this work. And I'll just give you one short story, very short
sure,
example.
Sure, please do.
In South Africa, where we've done this work in some of the townships, and the poor black communities around Johannesburg and Cape Town. And in one case, there was a very powerful story at one point when one of the women told a story of having been raped, a very graphic and horrific story, which left the whole group spellbound afterwards. And then the first man that spoke, he said, "I don't know how to be a man anymore. I feel traumatized." And as we worked with him, we helped him to understand that the reason he felt traumatized was because he had taken the pain of this woman, a part of that pain, into his own heart. And that's a key principle of this work. When we experience the pain of the other as our own pain, then there's a bridge across the hearts that's created. And that's the opening of the flow of compassion. And that transforms our very identity. And in this case, he, as he said, "I don't know how to be a man anymore." And about a year after that, he joined our professional training. He went through our whole year-long training and internship. And now that man is one of our certified facilitators who is bringing this gender inequity and reconciliation work to his community in Soweto in South Africa. So that's an example of how this work can transform a man, and also how these principles of the highest integrity and human dignity apply and can be implemented even in poor communities where they have been stripped of certain economic resources, but they can still reclaim their human dignity and reclaim those basic values of human kindness and nonviolence. And so there's several of our certified facilitators who are now teaching that work effectively within these communities.
All right, let me get a phone call. This is Stephanie in Pittsford on the line first. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I rediscovered an old book. It's called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus by John Gray, PhD, published in 1951. And it gives a hint as to how men hear women and how women hear men. It says, "Men are from Mars, women from Venus, Mr. Fix-It and the Home Improvement Committee. Men go to their caves and women talk. How to motivate the opposite sex. Speaking different languages. Men are like rubber bands. Women are like waves. Discovering our emotional needs. How to avoid arguments. Scoring points with the opposite sex. How to communicate different feelings. Keeping the magic alive." It's published in 1951, but I just really found it fascinating. Well, and if anybody wants to,
well, Stephanie, can I ask you a quick question, if you don't mind, Stephanie?
Sure.
Because you know you're referencing a book that a lot of people know. The title. When I was, let's see here, maybe 15 years ago, there was a show that was traveling around the country that I really, really liked at the time. And I suspect I'd still like it. The comedian who did the show, a one-person show, Robert Duback, did a show called The Male Intellect and Oxymoron. And it was all about the differences, the ostensible differences between men and women. And it was very funny. And the reason it landed with audiences, because the similar to you, Stephanie, reading this book, the audiences found a lot of truth in that. But what I do wonder is whether it was Bob Duback, The Male Intellect and Oxymoron, or Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, how much of what this insight is the socially constructed idea? For example, Duback said in his show that, you know, when women get together with other women, they talk. When men get together with other men, they do things. And you just got to understand that there's a difference. It's kinetic. There's kinetic energy with men, and there's, you know, emotional, verbal energy with women. And I thought, okay, people are laughing at that, but do you believe that, or do you believe that we've constructed and socialized that? Do you think that's a biological difference, or do you think that's a social construct, Stephanie?
I think it may be biological.
Okay.
And it says how women can score big with men. He makes a mistake, and she doesn't say, "I told you so," or offer advice. He disappoints her, and she doesn't punish him. He gets lost while driving, and she doesn't make a big deal out of it. I mean, it's really kind of very interesting. I think it's worth a read. It talks about men going to caves and women really needing to talk. I remember having to make an appointment with my husband to say, he's sitting on the couch, right? He's busy. He's had a big day. And I have to say to him, I really need to tell you something. It will only take 3 minutes of your time. And he was watching the clock. How many women have experienced that?
Stephanie, well, look, Stephanie, I appreciate the phone call, and I want to certainly honor and respect that perspective. I'd like to think we can change. I don't know. Let me ask Will and Cynthia what they make of it. I'm sure you're familiar with the book. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the book. Stephanie, thank you for bringing that in. And I think it was a really important foundational book at the time. Times are different. So I think there's probably a generational piece here, too. And I think some people can really relate to that. And the learnings, like you are, Stephanie. One thing that we really work with in our work is to be able to hear all perspectives and to let that be and honor that perspective. We also work to not universalize everyone. So I can think of many women, myself included, who love going to a cave and being alone. And so, you know, I'm careful with casting us into boxes, and especially with our younger generation now, who are opening up themselves with, you know, all possibilities. I'm also thinking about same-sex relationships where, you know, that can look very different than a heterosexual relationship in the roles and stereotypes that we put on each other. And at the same time, it sounds like, Stephanie, that book works for you and in your relationship, and that's important. So keep going with that. If it works for you, that's great.
Will, you want to add to that?
I'd simply say that I think there's a lot of beauty and validity in that book, but I would also say that all women have that Mars energy and all men have that Venus energy, and part of what we need to move towards is really integrating the masculine and feminine energies within each of us so that men can expand their fullness of their being. I remember one of the great saints in St. Teresa of Avila, one of the things that was said about her. She was an incredibly powerful woman. And what they said about her was that she was more of a man than most men, while also being fully a woman. And in a certain sense, I think we should all expand into the fullness of our humanity, which includes both masculine and feminine qualities.
All right, as we go to our only break of the hour, I'll just send us to break with this thought. Jason Taylor, former NFL Defensive Player of the Year, was in the broadcast booth in Green Bay a couple of nights ago where he said it was cold. It was open air. It's about 49 degrees. And you know what he said on the radio? He said, I know as a man I'm supposed to be tougher than that, but I think a man is about being in touch with their feelings, and I'm feeling cold. And I cheered as I was driving and listening on the radio. Let's get our only break of the hour and continue the conversation next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, another police community relations forum is coming our way next Monday, but this one is outside of the city of Rochester. And it's in a suburban area where the police department is saying they too want feedback and guidance, and they are willing to implement suggestions to create a plan for what to do over the next couple of years. So what do you want police to know about police community relations? That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our guests on the line with us are Reverend Cynthia Brix and Dr. William Keepin, the co-founders of Gender Equity and Reconciliation International, and their book is called Divine Duality, The Power of Reconciliation Between Women and Men. If you want to attend the retreat, it's a weekend retreat, October 11th through the 14th here in Rochester, called Liberation from Gender Oppression. You can do that. Go to the Gandhi Institute website. It's gandhiinstitute.org. Kit Miller, is that right?
Yep.
And, you know, I before we kind of continue with the conversation, I'm aghast to find out we got 12 minutes left and the hour is flying by here. I wonder, Kit, if you feel like you have an idea of what a tangible change will look like. Because in a moment, I want to ask Will and Cynthia what successful retreats look like for the people who emerge from them. What do you think that looks like in your eyes?
One of the things that I'm most interested in, as you know, in terms of my work at the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence, is to help us be better interrogators and make systems more visible. so that we can choose how we're going to relate to them. Most of us, we were just born into the systems. We didn't get to choose them. They just were handed to us by virtue of where we were born. So for me, anything that we do, I hope people begin to be able to make what's been invisible more visible. I also always want to do that with an eye to compassion and mercy. My deep experience has been that no one changes as a result of being shamed. We don't change as a result of being shamed. And I don't want any men, I'm thinking about so many beloved men I have in my life, I wouldn't want any of them to feel shame about the pain in the world. At the same time, we all have work to do. We have to address the work. So my hope is that we do some mourning and looking together, get a chance to look more clearly at the system that all of us are shaped by. All of us, you know, we have this conditioning. We didn't ask for it. It just was handed to us. It was handed to us differently depending on, you know, our race, our class, even our religion. But we, like, how are we going to relate to that? How are we going to choose? I'm thinking of a grief therapist whose work I really regard with a lot of respect in the West Coast. His name is Francis Weller. And he wrote a great, if you look him up, anybody that's interested, great article by him in the Sun magazine a few years ago called The Geography of Sorrow. Weller says that the men of my father's generation were some of the loneliest men who ever walked the earth. And the thing that I've noticed from some of the work that we've done with young men through, you know, the work of the Gandhi Institute, sharing that film, The Mask You Live In, with a number of audiences and college campuses, high school campuses, out in the community, there's a tremendous amount of pain that men walk with. And for me, one of the things that I would want this workshop to hold, this retreat to hold, is a tremendous amount of compassion and honesty for everybody, because that's what makes me feel excited about getting to the other side.
Will and Cynthia, I've talked a little bit about the young men that I spoke with, that we spoke with at WXXI News last Wednesday here in Rochester. I remember a conversation with a woman who told WXXI News that what she has learned from authors like Peterson is that there really is no oppression of women anymore, and that it is individualized how women choose to respond to adversity, but through determination, they can overcome anything. And this idea of oppression is basically outdated. And I wonder what you would add to a conversation with a woman who you meet, who says, look, I don't see it. I don't think it's real. And I think it's up to us to choose whatever path we choose. What would you say to that?
I'd start with those young women who are coming out with the abuse they experienced at the hands of the Olympics trainers, and, you know, some of the Me Too stories, and ask them if they would agree with that statement. So, I mean, I don't think there's any question that women are oppressed. Men are oppressed also. I think it's a matter of we are all oppressed, and we need to come together in that recognition and not try to look at who got it worse. Because it's true that the men are exceedingly lonely, and they're conditioned in certain ways that, I mean, men die, you know, at younger ages than women. And why is that? Men commit suicide, you know, four times more often than women. Why is this? Men are suffering in a very different way, but they suffer quietly. That's their nature. And that's partly why we don't know about it as much. So I think we're all in this suffering, and we're all oppressed. So I would suggest that that's what we need to face together, and then we can together come out of that.
Okay, Cynthia?
I just add that I would probably invite this woman or anybody to one of our workshops and be in community and listening to the stories. Now, maybe they would say everyone's playing a victim, and that's one thing we emphasize, that when we share, we're not sharing as victims. We're sharing in honor of the story of our life, of things that have happened to us. I would also talk about our families. I mean, I have a son who's turning 35 tomorrow, and I'm with you, Kit. I do not want to shame people. I don't want to shame anyone. And I am doing this for my children, my son, Patrick, my daughter, Emily, who's pregnant with a child. And we've got to do it for the next generation and the seven generations to come and heal these wounds and address the issues that are going on. And if someone wants to argue that, that's fine. Maybe it's later that we come back into conversation. I hold them in compassion as well, and
And I think we're all in the same boat together.
You have done... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Will. Go ahead.
No, just one point. If someone is feeling that women are not oppressed, we invite you to come to the workshop also and just bring your experience, because every person has a voice in this conversation, and every voice has a validity. But what we've experienced in this work is that... And one thing, that we never stop with just all of the painful truths. We have a whole stage of the work that's crucial, in which we have the men and women honor each other and uplift one another. And we end in a very profound place of a genuine reconciliation, where we begin to see each other beyond the usual stereotypes and begin to see each other as souls shining through these different bodies that we have. And through that, we reclaim a fundamental intimacy and that birthright that humanity has for men and women to live in harmony on this earth. That was what we were supposed to be doing. And we begin to glimpse that reality, even in a space as short as 3 days.
Well, and if you could then, because we've been talking a lot about ideas and concepts, just a few specific thoughts for the audience about what changes when your workshops, when your retreats are successful. A man leaves and X, Y, and Z changes, or a workplace changes in a certain way. A religious institution changes in a certain way. A woman's life has changed. What are the specific, either what you have directly experienced or what you are hoping to specifically see come out of these kind of events?
Well, I'll just share a really brief story, and I'll refer back to the story that Will also shared about the man who was able to take in the story of the woman's pain, and now he's one of our facilitators. We work from prisons to parliament to nonprofits to universities, all across the board, religious leaders, and one of our lead facilitators was an inmate in prison, so his life has been changed by this work, and his life with his family. Real briefly, a woman came to our workshop, and she had a horrific story of abuse in her family, and her and her children, the only ones that shared it until she came to our workshop and felt safe enough to begin sharing this story. At the end of the workshop, after sharing, or we have honoring ceremonies at the end, so we don't stay in the pain and suffering. We share about it, and then we come to a place where the men create an honoring ceremony for the women and the feminine, and the women create an honoring ceremony for the men and the masculine. This is really essential and important, because we need to acknowledge and honor where we've come. We know we're not going to heal it all in a three-day workshop, but we have begun, and we've shown up to do the work. And so in this workshop, Elena, I'll give her the name Elena, she showed up, she did her deep work, she shared her truth. The men really heard her, and she could hear the men, who was a different kind of man than the man she was in relationship, who had died several years earlier. When we did those honoring ceremonies, the men came around and washed the hands of each of the women, dried them gently, and it was the first time that Elena and most of the women in this workshop had ever felt the safe touch of a man before. Now, can you imagine what that must be like? That in and of itself is transformative. At the end of that workshop, Elena left just feeling liberated from having shared this deep secret that had been kept hidden so long. And about a week later, we saw her, and she came running up to us, and she said, "Will and Cynthia, I have something to share. After the workshop, I went to my husband's grave, and I was able to forgive him for everything that happened." During their marriage, he had moved a mistress into her house. Now, there's a gender issue, women-to-women gender issues. This woman lived in Elena's bedroom while Elena and her children lived in the toilet area for years. And Elena went to the mistress's house. She hadn't seen her in 20 years. And the mistress came and was in a wheelchair. And she said, "Elena, I've been thinking about you all week long." She invited her in and she said, "I think I'm in this wheelchair for all the horrific things that I did to you and your children." And they were able to reconcile. And that is the transformation of what can be done in the ability to share and come to a place of healing.
Hmm. Will, down to our last minute or so, some final thoughts from you as well. Go ahead, Will.
Some final thoughts just on your question of preaching to the choir. You know, the choir has gotten really huge now. There is a whole chorus of voices across all sectors of society calling for new solutions to these issues, calling for genuine solutions. And what we've learned is that people are calling for, how do we bring men together? How do we bring men and women together? And even most gender experts don't know how to do it. And why should they? Because this hasn't really been done. We've been working at it quietly for 26 years, so we have a skillful place to begin. But the point we want to make is that this is reclaiming some fundamental humanity. We have lost that way of relating to one another with dignity and intimacy in the public arena in a skillful way. And this is something that, as one of our professors and supporters in South Africa says, what we most need to do is to make public spaces intimate. And this work does that and allows men and women to reclaim their mutual respect and appreciation for each other.
Cynthia and Will, much love and respect for you. Thank you for taking the time, and we'll see you in Rochester in a month.
Thank you, and a shout out to Dwayne and Padme, who brought us here in the first place. So thank you.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to meeting all of you and doing this work with you.
If you want to meet them, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Schultz Community Center at Nazareth College. They're talking about transforming patriarchy in religions. GandhiInstitute.org if you want to register for the workshops for the retreat called Liberation from Gender Oppression, October 11th through the 14th. Kit, as always, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Kit is the director of the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence in Rochester. Short break, more connections coming up.